Character. Story brand principle 1. The customer is the hero, not your brand. A story doesn't really pick up until the hero needs to disarm a bomb, win someone's heart, defeat a villain, or fight for their emotional or physical survival. A story starts with a hero who wants something. And then the question becomes, will the hero get what she wants? Before knowing what the hero wants, the audience has little interest in her fate. This is why screenwriters have to define the character's ambition within the first 9 or so minutes of a film getting started. Will the underdog get the promotion? Will the runner finish the marathon? Will the team win the championship? These are the questions that keep an audience engaged for 2 hours. As a brand, it's important to define something your customer wants, because as soon as we define something our customer wants, we posit a story question in the mind of a customer. Can this brand really help me get what I want? Recently, a high-end resort hired us to help them clarify their message. Like many companies, they were experiencing an identity crisis. Their marketing collateral featured images of their restaurant, front desk, and staff. It all looked nice, but unless they were trying to sell their buildings, they weren't exactly inviting customers into a story. What their customers wanted most, actually, was a luxurious, restful experience. After story branding their resort, they changed the text on their website from long stories about themselves, which positioned them as the hero, to images of a warm bath, plush towels and robes, someone getting a massage in the spa, and a looping clip of a back porch rocking chair against the backdrop of trees blowing in the wind along a golf course. They replaced the text on their main page with short and powerful copy. Find the luxury and rest you've been looking for. That became the mantra for the entire staff. This phrase was posted on their office walls, and to this day, you can stop any team member from the sous chef to the groundskeeper, and they will tell you their customers are looking for 2 things, luxury and rest. Defining exactly what their customer wanted brought clarity and camaraderie to the staff. Each member of the staff then understood his or her role in the story they were inviting their customers to engage. One university we work with defined their customer's desire as a hassle-free MBA you can complete after work. A landscaping company humorously defined their customer's ambition as a yard that looks better than your neighbor's. A caterer we work with in Los Angeles defined his customer's desire as a mobile fine dining experience in the environment of your choice. When we identify something our customer wants and communicate it simply, the story we are inviting them into is given definition and direction. Here are some more examples from companies we work with. A financial advisor. A plan for your retirement. College Alumni Association. Leave a meaningful legacy. Fine dining restaurant. A meal everybody will remember. Real estate agent. The home you've dreamed about. Bookstore. A story to get lost in. Breakfast bars. A healthy start to your day. When you define something your customer wants, the customer is invited to alter their story in your direction. If they see your brand as a trustworthy and reliable guide, they will likely engage. Open a story gap. In story terms, identifying a potential desire for your customer opens what's sometimes called a story gap. The idea is that you place a gap between a character and what they want. Moviegoers pay attention when there's a story gap because they wonder if and how that gap is going to be closed. Jason Bourne is a spy who has amnesia, and we wonder if he'll find anyone to help him. When he meets a young woman named Marie, that gap closes, only for another to open. Bourne and Marie have to flee the country. When they escape, that gap closes for yet another one to open. The cycle goes on and on, maintaining a taut grip on the audience's attention up until the finale. To understand the power of a story gap is to understand what compels a human brain toward a desire. Even classical music follows this formula. Many classical sonatas can be broken into 3 sections: exposition, development, and recapitulation. The final section, recapitulation, is simply an altered version of the exposition that brings a sense of resolve. If that doesn't make sense, try singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star without singing the final note on the word R. It will bother you to no end. We also see this at work in poetry. When our ears hear Lord Byron's first line, "She walks in beauty like the night," a story gap has been opened. We are waiting to hear a word that rhymes with night and closes the open gap in our minds. Once we hear of cloudless climes and starry skies, our minds find a bit of resolution. Until the next line, that is. The opening and closing of a story gap is a magnetic force that drives much of human behavior. Arousal is the opening of a story gap, and sexual fulfillment brings its closing. Hunger is the opening of a story gap, and a meal ushers its closing. There is little action in life that can't be explained by the opening and closing of various story gaps. When we fail to define something our customer wants, we fail to open a story gap. When we don't open a story gap in our customer's mind, they have no motivation to engage us, because there is no question that demands resolution. Defining something our customer wants and featuring it in our marketing materials will open a story gap. Pare down the customer's ambition to a single focus. A critical mistake many organizations make in defining something their customer wants is they don't pare down that desire to a single focus. I've had countless conversations with frustrated business leaders who push back at this point and say, "Wait, we provide about 27 things our customers want. Can't we mention all of them?" The answer is no, at least not yet. Until we've defined a specific desire and become known for helping people achieve it, we shouldn't add too many conflicting story gaps to our StoryBrand brand script. This can be frustrating if your products and services fulfill many desires. The reality of a diverse brand, though, brings the same challenge many amateur screenwriters succumb to. They clutter the story by diluting their hero's desire with too many ambitions. As you create a brand script for your overall brand, focus on one simple desire, and then, as you create campaigns for each division and maybe even each product, you can identify more things your customer wants in the subplots of your overall brand. At the highest level, the most important challenge for business leaders is to define something simple and relevant their customers want and to become known for delivering on that promise. Everything else is a subplot that, after having delivered on the customer's basic desire, will only serve to delight and surprise them all the more. Choose a desire relevant to their survival. Once a brand defines what their customer wants, they are often guilty of making the second mistake. What they've defined isn't related to the customer's sense of survival. In their desire to cast a wide net, they define a blob of a desire that is so vague, potential customers can't figure out why they need it in the first place. A leadership expert recently asked for feedback on his brand. As I reviewed his marketing material, I noticed he was making a critical mistake. In defining what his customer wanted, he was vague. The idea behind his brand is that he imparts knowledge to potential leaders. He saw himself as a storehouse of leadership resources and wanted to be the go-to guy for achieving excellence. In fact, his tagline was, "Inhale knowledge, exhale excellence." Seems clear enough, but is it? What does exhaling excellence even mean? He was making potential customers burn too many mental calories to figure out how he was going to help them survive and thrive. I recommended he make an edit to his message. Instead of saying, "Inhale knowledge, exhale excellence," simply say, "Helping you become the leader everybody loves." Becoming the leader everybody loves means the customer would be more respected and better connected to a tribe. They'd have greater social and career opportunities and much more. Exhaling excellence sounded nice, but thriving as the leader of a tribe is directly connected to survival. People will always choose a story that helps them survive and thrive. Fortunately, he liked the idea, mostly because that's what he was already doing. Defining something the customer wants and connecting it with the customer's desire for survival opened an enticing story gap. What does survival mean? When I say survival, I'm talking about that primitive desire we all have to be safe, healthy, happy, and strong. Survival simply means we have the economic and social resources to eat, drink, reproduce, and fend off foes. So what kinds of desires fit under this definition? Well, too many to count. But consider these examples. Conserving financial resources. In order to survive and thrive, your customers may need to conserve resources. In simple terms, this means they may need to save money. If your brand can help them save money, you've tapped into a survival mechanism. Walmart has built their brand on the promise of everyday low prices. Their tagline, "Save money, live better," further communicates savings and value and thus taps into a basic function of survival, the conservation of resources. Conserving time. In developed countries, most of our customers have thankfully moved beyond the hunter-gatherer stage of survival. They are familiar then with the notion of opportunity costs. Can your house cleaning service give your customers more time to work on other things or more time to spend with family? Then they might be interested. Building social networks. If our brand can help us find community, we've tapped into yet another survival mechanism. We only think we're being nice when we bring our coworkers coffee. But what if we were actually being nice because our primitive brains want to make sure we are connected to a tribe in case the bad guys come knocking at the door? Add this to the fact that human beings have a strong desire to nurture and be nurtured, and we have tapped into yet another survival mechanism. Gaining status. Luxury brands like Mercedes and Rolex don't make much practical sense in terms of survival, right? In fact, spending lots of money buying a luxury car when a more common brand would do the trick seems counter to our survival, doesn't it? Not when you consider the importance of status. Status in any tribe is a survival mechanism. It projects a sense of abundance that may attract powerful allies, repel potential foes, like a lion with a loud roar. And if we're into shallow companions, might even help us secure a mate. Rolex, Mercedes, Louis Vuitton, and other luxury brands are truly selling more than just cars and watches. They are selling an identity associated with power, prestige, and refinement. Accumulating resources. If the products and services you offer help people make money or accumulate much-needed resources, that will quickly translate into a person's desire for survival. With more money, our customers will have more opportunity to secure many of the other survival resources they may need. Many StoryBrand clients run business-to-business offerings. StoryBrand itself is a business-to-business company. So offering increased productivity, increased revenue, or decreased waste are powerful associations with the need for a business or an individual to survive and thrive. The innate desire to be generous. None of the desires I've listed are evil. They can all be taken too far, but the reality is we are designed to survive. Still, we should be comforted by the fact that nearly all human beings have an enormous potential for generosity. Achieving an aspirational identity of being sacrificial actually helps us survive, fends off foes, decreases outside criticism, helps earn trust in our tribe, and so on. But it also taps into something truly redemptive. We want other people to survive, too. Most people are not nearly as Darwinian in their thinking as we've been led to believe. We are empathetic and caring creatures who will gladly sacrifice for the well-being of others, often in anonymity. The truth is, we aren't only interested in our own survival, we are interested in the survival of others, especially those who have not been given the opportunities we enjoy. The desire for meaning. Viktor Frankl was right when he contended with Sigmund Freud, insinuating that the chief desire of man is not pleasure, but meaning. In fact, in his book Man's Search for Meaning, Frankl argued convincingly that man was actually most tempted to distract himself with pleasure when his life was void of meaning. So how do we offer potential customers a sense of meaning? Not unlike giving our customers the opportunity to be generous, we invite them to participate in something greater than themselves. A movement. A cause to champion. a valiant fight against a real villain, be that villain flesh and blood or a harmful philosophy. What's the story question for your customer? When I offered my executive coach friend the tagline, "Helping you become the leader everybody loves," his customers' brains were able to translate that message into multiple survival categories, including social networks, status, the innate desire to be generous, the opportunity to gain resources, and even the desire for deeper meaning. In business, if we don't communicate clearly, we shrink. When we're motivating a team, convincing shareholders, or engaging customers, we must define a desire our customers have, or we will have failed to open a story gap and our audience will ignore us. Remember, customers want to know where you can take them. Unless you identify something they want, it's doubtful they will listen. Imagine your customer is a hitchhiker. You pull over to give him a ride, and the one burning question on his mind is simply, "Where are you going?" But as he approaches, you roll down the window and start talking about your mission statement, or how your grandfather built this car with his bare hands, or how your road trip playlist is all 1980s alternative music. This person doesn't care. All he wants to do is get to San Francisco with a flower in his hair. The goal for our branding should be that every potential customer knows exactly where we want to take them, a luxury resort where they can get some rest, to become the leader everybody loves, or to save money and live better. If you randomly asked a potential customer where your brand wants to take them, would they be able to answer? Would they be able to repeat back to you exactly what your brand offers? If not, your brand is suffering the cost of confusion. You can fix this. Define a desire for your customer, and the story you are inviting customers into will have a powerful hook. Clarify your message so customers listen. 1. Go to mystorybrand.com and either create a StoryBrand brand script or log in to your existing brand script. 2. Either alone or with a team, brainstorm what potential desires your customers might have that you can fulfill. 3. Make a decision. Choose something your customer wants and fill in the character module of your StoryBrand brand script. 4. Read the next chapter and repeat this process for the next section of your brand script. Once you fill out the first module of your StoryBrand brand script, you'll be on your way to inviting customers into an incredible story. At this point, they're interested in you and what you offer. But what can we do to entice them even further into a story? Let's move on to part 2 and find out. You will be tempted to fill out the rest of your StoryBrand brand script, but I encourage you to read the chapter associated with each module to be sure you are filling it out correctly. Once you've completed your first brand script, section 3 of this book will help you create simple, effective marketing tools. Chapter 5, Has a Problem. StoryBrand Principle 2. Companies tend to sell solutions to external problems, but customers buy solutions to internal problems. Now that you've entered into your customer's story, how do you increase their interest in your brand? You borrow another play from the storyteller's playbook. You start talking about the problems your customers face. Identifying our customers' problems deepens their interest in the story we are telling. Every story is about somebody who is trying to solve a problem. So when we identify our customers' problems, they recognize us as the brand that understands them. The problem is the hook of a story. And if we don't identify our customers' problems, the story we are telling will fall flat. As soon as the conflict in a story is resolved, audiences stop paying attention. As the novelist James Scott Bell says, readers want to fret. It's true in story, and it's true in branding. If Jason Bourne were to get a call 30 minutes into the first Bourne Identity movie and a gentle, calming voice began to explain who Jason really was, why he'd suffered amnesia, and that the government was offering him a pension along with a house on the coast, then no one would keep watching. The reason to pay attention would be gone. It bears repeating. The more we talk about the problems our customers experience, the more interest they will have in our brand. How to talk about your customers' problems. In the second module of the StoryBrand framework, we're going to look at three elements of conflict that will increase customer interest, ratchet up engagement, and give a greater depth of meaning to the story our brand is telling. First, though, let's start with the root of where all this conflict is coming from. I'm talking about one of the most dynamic, interesting characters in any story. The villain. Every story needs a villain. The villain is the number one device storytellers use to give conflict a clear point of focus. Screenwriters and novelists know the stronger, more evil, more dastardly the villain, the more sympathy we will have for the hero, and the more the audience will want them to win in the end. This translates into audience engagement. How sympathetic would Batman be without the Joker? Luke Skywalker without Darth Vader? Harry Potter without Voldemort? Superman without Kryptonite? And let's be honest, Lex Luthor isn't that interesting of a bad guy. If we want our customers' ears to perk up when we talk about our products and services, we should position those products and services as weapons they can use to defeat a villain. And the villain should be dastardly. The villain doesn't have to be a person, but without question, it should have personified characteristics. If we're selling time management software, for instance, we might vilify the idea of distractions. Could we offer our product as a weapon customers could use to stop distractions in their tracks? Sounds kind of dramatic, right? And yet, distractions are what's diluting our customers' potential, wrecking their families, stealing their sanity, and costing them enormous amounts of time and money. Distractions, then, make for a great villain. Now that I've pointed out the technique of vilifying our customers' challenges, you'll see it in television commercials all the time. Who knew that those dust bunnies collecting along the baseboards of our houses move around in animated criminal gangs wearing leather jackets, coordinating their devilish efforts to ruin our floors? Ah, that is, until they meet their match, the new mop from Acme Mop Company. Advertisers personify the problems their customers face in order to capture their imagination and give their frustrations a focal point. Fuzzy hairballs with squeaky voices living in your drains, making nests and clogging up the pipes? Yellow globs of living, breathing, talking plaque vacationing between your teeth? These are all personified versions of conflict. They are all villains. Here are four characteristics that make for a good villain on your StoryBrand brand script. 1. The villain should be a root source. Frustration, for example, is not a villain. Frustration is what a villain makes us feel. High taxes, rather, are a good example of a villain. 2. The villain should be relatable. When people hear us talk about the villain, they should immediately recognize it as something they disdain. 3. The villain should be singular. One villain is enough. A story with too many villains falls apart for lack of clarity. 4. The villain should be real. Never go down the path of being a fearmonger. There are plenty of actual villains out there to fight. Let's go after them on behalf of our customers. Is there a villain in your customer's story? Of course there is. What is the chief source of conflict that your products and services defeat? Talk about this villain. The more you talk about the villain, the more people will want a tool to help them defeat the villain. Later, when you are creating your brand script, I'll ask you to brainstorm what kind of villain your customer faces. For now, though, let's look closely at the kinds of conflict this villain causes. Once we understand our customers' problems, we'll have a better idea how to talk about them in such a way they engage. The three levels of conflict. A villain is the antagonist because the villain causes the hero serious problems. That's obvious. But what's less obvious is that in a story, there are three levels of problems, and they work together to capture a reader's or a moviegoer's imagination. The three levels of problems heroes and customers face are external problems, internal problems, and philosophical problems. In a story, a villain initiates an external problem that causes the character to experience internal frustration that is quite simply philosophically wrong. These are also the three levels of problems a customer hopes to solve when they buy a product. I know that sounds complicated, but let's take a closer look at each level of conflict so we know exactly which of our customers' frustrations to talk about as we clarify our message. External problems. In literature, a villain's job is to wreak havoc on the hero, to place barriers between them and their desperate desire for stability. But ill intentions aren't enough. Something, that is, something or things, must represent this barrier. Enter the external problem. In stories, the external problem is often a physical, tangible problem the hero must overcome in order to save the day. The problem might manifest itself as a ticking time bomb or a runaway bus or maybe even a combination of the two, a bomb on a bus that will go off if Keanu Reeves doesn't keep the speed above 50 miles per hour. The external problem works like a prized chess piece set between the hero and the villain, and each is trying to control the piece so they can win the game. For Billy Bean in the movie Moneyball, the external problem is the need to win baseball games. For Matthew Broderick in the movie War Games, it's a piece of rogue software that has taken over the American government's computer system and attempts to wage war against the Soviets. But what does the existence of an external problem in a story have to do with branding? Well, most of us are in the business of solving external problems. We provide insurance or clothes or soccer balls. If we own a restaurant, the external problem we solve is hunger. The external problem a plumber fixes might be a leaky pipe, just like a pest control guy might solve the external problem of termites in the attic. Brainstorming what external problems you solve will be the easiest part of creating your brand script. It's usually pretty obvious, but you'd be wrong to think the reason people call you, walk through your door, or visit your website is limited to the resolution of an external problem. Something else is going on. Internal problems. By limiting our marketing messages to only external problems, we neglect a principle that is costing us thousands and potentially millions of dollars. That principle is this. Companies tend to sell solutions to external problems, but people buy solutions to internal problems. The purpose of an external problem in a story is to manifest an internal problem. If I wrote a movie about a guy who simply needed to disarm a bomb, audiences would lose interest. What storytellers and screenwriters do, then, is create a backstory of frustration in the hero's life. In the movie Moneyball, for instance, Billy Bean failed in his playing career and so was filled with self-doubt about whether he could redeem himself as a general manager. In Star Wars, Luke Skywalker was told by his uncle that he was too young to join the Resistance, so he doubted his ability until the very end. In almost every story, the hero struggles with the same question, do I have what it takes? This question makes them feel frustrated, incompetent, and confused. The sense of self-doubt is what makes a movie about baseball relatable to a soccer mom and a romantic comedy relatable to a truck-driving husband. What stories teach us is that people's internal desire to resolve a frustration is a greater motivator than their desire to solve an external problem. This is where most brands make a critical mistake. By assuming our customers only want to resolve external problems, we fail to engage the deeper story they are actually living. The truth is, the external problems we solve are causing frustrations in their lives, and just like in a story, it's those frustrations that are motivating them to call you. After their near collapse, Apple didn't find their footing until Steve Jobs understood that people felt intimidated, internal problem, by computers and wanted a simpler interface with technology. In one of the most powerful advertising campaigns in history, Apple showed a simple, hip, fun character who just wanted to take photos and listen to music and write books, next to a not-so-hip tech nerd who wanted to talk about all the inner workings of his operating system. The campaign positioned Apple computers as the company to go to if you wanted to enjoy life and express yourself, but felt intimidated by all the tech talk. What was the internal problem Apple identified? It was the same intimidation most people felt about computers. Apple started selling more than computers. They started selling a resolution to the problem of customer intimidation. Understanding their customers' internal problems is one of the reasons Apple achieved such growth and created passionate brand evangelists. The only reason our customers buy from us is because the external problem we solve is frustrating them in some way. If we can identify that frustration, put it into words, and offer to resolve it along with the original external problem, something special happens. We bond with our customers because we've positioned ourselves more deeply into their narrative. For example, if we own a house painting business, our customer's external problem might be an unsightly home. The internal problem, however, may involve a sense of embarrassment about having the ugliest home on the street. Knowing this, our marketing could offer paint that will make your neighbors jealous. What frustrations do our products resolve? Recently, the rental car company National got my business by understanding my internal frustration. I used to rent from a company that got on my nerves. Normally, when I get off a plane, I don't feel like making small talk. The staff at the company I used to rent cars from had a policy of chit-chatting with their customers. They even used a script. First, they asked whether I was in town for business or pleasure. Then they asked about the weather where I came from. On and on it went. I heard this script so many times, I started having fun beating them to their own talking points. I'd often jump ahead on their script and ask the clerk, "Are you going to be able to have a little downtime while you're in town?" They'd just stare blankly at me because I'd hijack their next line. One day, though, I was watching television and a commercial came on for National. It showed a guy walking through the rental office without talking to anybody. The character talked about how he hated having to make conversation with salespeople and how he loved walking straight to his car. I immediately changed rental car companies and have been happy ever since. Speaking of car companies, CarMax is a chain of used car dealerships that aims most of their marketing collateral at the internal problem a customer experiences when looking for a used car, namely having to interact with a used car salesman. If you've ever walked onto a used car lot, you know the feeling. It's as though you're about to tangle with a professional wrestler. Knowing their customers don't want to haggle over prices or risk buying a lemon, CarMax's business strategy is aimed at you not having to feel lied to, cheated, or worked over in your car buying experience. To do this, they have an agreement plan with their customer that ensures the price on the car is the price you'll pay, and lets you know that their salespeople aren't paid on a normal commission structure. They also highlight their quality certification and inspection process that ensures every car they sell is reliable. The external problem CarMax resolves is the need for a car, of course, but they hardly advertise about cars at all. They focus on their customers' internal problems, and in doing so, entered one of the least trusted industries in America and created a $15 billion franchise. Likewise, Starbucks exploded by not just offering customers a cup of coffee, but by giving them a comfortable, sophisticated environment in which to relax. Customers felt good about themselves when they walked into a Starbucks. Starbucks was delivering more value than just coffee. They were delivering a sense of sophistication and enthusiasm about life. They were also offering a place for people to meet in which they could experience affiliation and belonging. Starbucks changed American culture from hanging out in diners and bars to hanging out in a local Italian-style coffee shop. In understanding how their customers wanted to feel, Starbucks took a product that Americans were used to paying 50 cents for or drinking for almost free at home or at work and were able to charge $3 or $4 per cup. Starbucks customers are willing to pay more for their coffee because they sense greater value with each cup. Framing our products as a resolution to both external and internal problems increases the perceived value, and I would argue, actual value, of those products. Later, I'll guide you through a brainstorming exercise helping you identify some of your customers' internal problems. But before that, let's look at a third kind of problem our customers experience. This third level of problem can take a story over the top. It can have audiences standing on their seats, and is one of the main reasons a film will win Best Picture at the Academy Awards. and it has the same kind of power when it comes to helping us turn disinterested customers into brand fanatics. Philosophical problems. The philosophical problem in a story is about something even larger than the story itself. It's about the question, why? Why does this story matter in the overall epic of humanity? Why is it important that Tommy Boy save his dad's company? I'll tell you why. Because the people trying to take Tommy Boy down are lying thieves. This is a comedic story about honesty, family, integrity, and hard work versus deception, greed, and trickery. Why is it important that Hamlet avenge his father's death? Because his uncle is getting away with murder. Why is it important that Bridget Jones finds love? Because the beauty and worth of every person deserves to be recognized and cherished by another. A philosophical problem can best be talked about using terms like ought and shouldn't. Bad people shouldn't be allowed to win, or people ought to be treated fairly. In the movie The King's Speech, the external problem is King George's stutter. This external problem manifests the internal frustration and self-doubt the king struggles with. He simply doesn't believe he has what it takes to lead his country. Philosophically, though, the stakes are much greater. Because the king must unify his people against the Nazis, the story takes on a philosophical problem of good versus evil. In Jerry Maguire, the philosophical question revolves around whether people are worth more than the money that they can bring in. Romeo and Juliet ask whether romantic love is more important than family squabbles and tribal unrest. What's the deeper meaning? People want to be involved in a story that is larger than themselves. Brands that give customers a voice in a larger narrative add value to their products by giving their customers a deeper sense of meaning. After creating their brand script, a global consulting firm we work with began to talk about how everybody deserved to work for a great manager. A pet store owner who came to us hung a sign in her window that said, "Pets deserve to eat healthy food too." A fun-loving travel agent came to us and adopted the seasonal line, "Because this summer should be remembered forever." Before music went digital, Tower Records promoted their chain of record stores using the tagline, "No music, no life." Not only did the tagline help them sell more than $1 billion in records each year, but they sold thousands of bumper stickers and t-shirts featuring the tagline to fans who wanted to associate with the philosophical belief that music mattered. Is there a deeper story your brand contributes to? Can your products be positioned as tools your customers can use to fight back against something that ought not be? If so, let's include some philosophical stakes in our messaging. The perfect brand promise. If we really want to satisfy our customers, we can offer much more than products or services. We can offer to resolve an external, internal, and philosophical problem whenever they engage our business. Storytellers use this formula to endear audiences all the time. When Luke shoots the photon torpedo through the little hole in the Death Star, he actually resolves the external problem of destroying the Death Star, the internal problem that had him wondering whether he had what it took to be a Jedi, and the philosophical problem of good versus evil, all with the press of a button. When these three levels of problems are resolved in one shot, the audience experiences a sense of pleasure and relief, causing them to love the story. This scene is often called the climactic scene or obligatory scene, and it is arguably the most important scene in the movie because every other scene builds toward it in some way. The resolution of the hero's external, internal, and philosophical problem is the reason we cried when Woody and Buzz were reunited with Andy in Toy Story. And it's why we felt so deeply when Private Ryan was rescued by Captain John Miller. This formula works because human beings experience three levels of problems in their everyday lives. They aren't just looking for a resolution to one level of problem, they're hoping for a resolution to all three. If we really want our business to grow, we should position our products as the resolution to an external, internal, and philosophical problem, and frame the buy now button as the action a customer must take to create closure in their story. Let's look at how some successful brands we all know about have positioned the purchasing of their products as the resolution to external, internal, and philosophical problems. Tesla Motor Cars. The villain, gas-guzzling inferior technology. External, I need a car. Internal, I want to be an early adopter of new technology. Philosophical, my choice of car ought to help save the environment. Nespresso home coffee machines. The villain, coffee machines that make bad coffee. External, I want better tasting coffee at home. Internal, I want my home coffee machine to make me feel sophisticated. Philosophical, I shouldn't have to be a barista to make a gourmet coffee at home. Edward Jones Financial Planning. Villain, financial firms that don't listen to their customers. External, I need investment help. Internal, I'm confused about how to do this, especially with all the tech-driven resources out there. Philosophical, if I'm going to invest my money, I deserve an advisor who will thoughtfully explain things in person. What challenges are you helping your customer overcome? The idea of identifying a villain that is causing an internal, external, and philosophical problem may seem daunting, but it will come to you if you commit to working it out in a brainstorming session. But be careful. A large problem most of our clients face is they want to include 3 villains and 7 external problems and 4 internal problems and so on. But, as I've already mentioned, stories are best when they are simple and clear. We are going to have to make choices. Is there a single villain your brand stands against? And what external problem is that villain causing? How is that external problem making your customers feel? And why is it unjust for people to have to suffer at the hands of this villain? These are the 4 questions we want to answer in the problem section of our StoryBrand brand script. And when we do, the story our brand is telling will take shape because our hero, the customer who wants something, is being challenged. Will they win? Will the problem be resolved? Perhaps. The thing is, they will have to engage your brand to find out. Clarify your message so customers listen. 1. Go to mystorybrand.com and either create a brand script or log into your existing brand script. 2. Either alone or with a team, brainstorm all of the literal and metaphorical villains your brand takes a stand against. 3. Brainstorm the external problems your brand resolves. Is there one that seems to represent the widest swath of products? 4. Brainstorm the internal problem, frustration, or doubt your customers are feeling as it relates to your brand. Is there one that stands out as a universal experience for your customers? 5. Is your brand part of a larger, more important story? Is there a philosophical wrong your brand stands against? Once you finish your brainstorming session, make the 5 StoryBrand brand script decisions that will allow you to fill out part 2 of your StoryBrand brand script. Chapter 6, And Meets a Guide. StoryBrand Principle 3. Customers aren't looking for another hero, they are looking for a guide. Shakespeare was right. A person's life is made up of many acts. As a book writer, though, I prefer to see these acts as chapters. If you look back on your life, you'll likely see them too. There is the chapter when you grew up poor and the chapter when you began to understand the importance of relationships. There is the chapter when you realized you were good at math or sports. And there was the chapter when you left home to start out on your own. No 2 lives are the same, and yet we share common chapters. Every human being is on a transformational journey. It's easy to recognize these chapters by their events, or what writer and story scholar James Scott Bell calls doorways of no return. This might have been our parents' divorce, our first crush, a rejection from somebody we loved, or having absolutely nailed the moonwalk when the crowd gathered around us at the junior high dance. In stories, events mark the beginnings and endings of our chapters. But if we look closer, we will see something else. Or, more accurately, somebody else. The events that define our chapters are often instigated or interpreted by mystical characters that help us along the way. In a story, there are many names for these characters, but I choose to call them guides. In his book, The Seven Basic Plots, Christopher Booker describes the introduction of the guide into the story this way. A hero or heroine falls under a dark spell, which eventually traps them in some wintry state, akin to a living death, physical or spiritual imprisonment, sleep, sickness, or some other form of enchantment. For a long time, they languish in this frozen condition. Then, a miraculous act of redemption takes place, focused on a particular figure who helps to liberate the hero or heroine from imprisonment. From the depths of darkness, they are brought up into the glorious light. Every hero is looking for a guide. When I talk about a guide, I'm talking about our mother and father when they sat us down to talk about integrity, or a football coach who helped us understand the importance of working hard and believing we could accomplish more than we ever thought possible. Guides might include the authors of poems we've read, leaders who move the world into new territory, therapists who helped us make sense of our problems, and yes, even brands that offered us encouragement and tools to help us overcome a challenge. If a hero solves her own problem in a story, the audience will tune out. Why? Because we intuitively know if she could solve her own problem, she wouldn't have gotten into trouble in the first place. Storytellers use the guide character to encourage the hero and equip them to win the day. You've seen the guide in nearly every story you've read, listened to, or watched. Frodo has Gandalf, Katniss has Haymitch, and Luke Skywalker has Yoda. Hamlet was guided by his father's ghost, and Romeo was taught the ways of love by Juliet. Just like in stories, human beings wake up every morning self-identifying as a hero. They are troubled by internal, external, and philosophical conflicts, and they know they can't solve these problems on their own. The fatal mistake some brands make, especially young brands who believe they need to prove themselves, is they position themselves as the hero in the story instead of the guide. As I've already mentioned, a brand that positions itself as the hero is destined to lose. The fatal mistake. The fatal ramification of positioning our brand as the hero could be huge. Consider the failure of the music streaming service Tidal. Never heard of it? There's a good reason. Rapper Jay-Z founded the company with a personal investment of a whopping $56 million with a mission to get everyone to respect music again. Instead of being owned by music studios or tech companies, Tidal would be owned by musicians, allowing them to cut out the middleman and take their products directly to market. As a result, the artists would pocket more of the profits. Sounds like a great plan. But Jay-Z failed to consider the mistake of positioning himself and other artists as the heroes. Were the artists going to buy music from each other? No. He needed to position the customer, not the artist, as the hero. In the months leading up to the launch of Tidal, Jay-Z recruited 16 well-known musicians who agreed to release exclusive content on his platform in exchange for a percentage of equity. In their multi-million dollar rollout, the artists stood shoulder to shoulder at a press conference to explain their mission. Predictably, this is where everything fell apart. If only Jay-Z, in other ways a virtual genius, had understood the age-old rules of story, he might have avoided walking into a field of landmines. "Water is free," Jay-Z quipped. "Music is $6, but no one wants to pay for music," he continued, somewhat confusingly. "You should drink free water from the tap. It's a beautiful thing. And if you want to hear the most beautiful song, then support the artists." Social media, especially Twitter, eviscerated Jay-Z and Tidal. Thousands reminded him to check with the people who paid his bills to discover water wasn't actually free. Overnight, an artist who built his career speaking for the people sounded entitled. The public became nauseated listening to a row of famous multimillionaire musicians guilt-trip them into paying more for their music. The crucial mistake? Jay-Z failed to answer the one question lingering in the subconscious of every hero customer. How are you helping me win the day? Tidal existed to help the artists win the day, not customers, and so it failed. Always position your customer as the hero and your brand as the guide. Always. If you don't, you will die. The story is not about us. The larger point here is simple. The day we stop losing sleep over the success of our business and start losing sleep over the success of our customers is the day our business will start growing again. If we are tempted to position our brand as the hero because heroes are strong and capable and the center of attention, we should take a step back. In stories, the hero is never the strongest character. Heroes are often ill-equipped and filled with self-doubt. They don't know if they have what it takes. They are often reluctant, being thrown into the story rather than willingly engaging the plot. The guide, however, has already been there and done that, and has conquered the hero's challenge in their own backstory. The guide, not the hero, is the one with the most authority. Still, the story is rarely about the guide. The guide simply plays a role. The story must always be focused on the hero. And if a storyteller, or business leader, forgets this, the audience will get confused about who the story is really about, and they will lose interest. This is true in business, in politics, and even in your own family. People are looking for a guide to help them, not another hero. Those who realize the epic story of life is not about them, but actually about the people around them, somehow win in the end. It's counterintuitive, but it's true. In fact, leaders who think the story of life is all about them may achieve temporary success, but are usually remembered in history's narrative as a villain. The two characteristics of a guide. We have seen hundreds, if not thousands, of businesses experience an increase in customer engagement once they started positioning themselves as the guide. After filtering their message through the StoryBrand framework, business leaders realize their websites, email blasts, digital ads, television commercials, and even their elevator pitches have been facing the wrong direction. Simply turning our focus to the customer and offering them a heroic role in a meaningful story is enough to radically change the way we talk about and even do business. So what do we have to do to be recognized as the guide in our customers' lives? The two things a brand must communicate to position themselves as the guide are empathy and authority. When Luke Skywalker meets Yoda, he encounters the perfect guide. Yoda is the endearing character who understands Luke's dilemma and empathetically coaches him to use the Force. This empathy would go nowhere, of course, were it not for Yoda's authority as a Jedi himself. Yoda understands Luke's dilemma and has mastered the skills Luke must develop if he is going to win the day. The guide must have this precise 1-2 punch of empathy and authority in order to move the hero and the story along. These are the characteristics the hero is looking for, and when she senses them, she knows she's found her guide. Express empathy. When Bill Clinton delivered his now famous line, "I feel your pain," in 1992, he did more than just clinch a victory over George H.W. Bush. He positioned himself as the guide in the American voter's story. A guide expresses an understanding of the pain and frustration of their hero. In fact, many pundits believe Clinton locked up the election during a town hall debate in which Bush gave a rambling answer to a young woman when she asked what the national debt meant to the average American. Clinton countered Bush's linear, cerebral answer by asking the woman if she knew anybody who'd lost their job. He asked whether it pained her that she had friends out of work, and when the woman said yes, he went on to explain how the national debt is tied to the well-being of every American, even her and her friends. That's empathy. When we empathize with our customer's dilemma, we create a bond of trust. People trust those who understand them, and they trust brands that understand them, too. Oprah Winfrey, an undeniably successful guide to millions, once explained the three things every human being wants most are to be seen, heard, and understood. This is the essence of empathy. Empathetic statements start with words like, "We understand how it feels," or "Nobody should have to experience," or "Like you, we are frustrated by," or in the case of one Toyota commercial inviting Toyota owners to engage their local Toyota service, simply, "We care about your Toyota." Expressing empathy isn't difficult. Once we've identified our customer's internal problem, we simply need to let them know we understand and would like to help them find a resolution. Scan your marketing material and make sure you've told your customers that you care. Customers won't know you care until you tell them. Are you like me? Empathy is more than just sentimental slogans, though. Real empathy means letting customers know we see them as we see ourselves. Customers look for brands they have something in common with. Remember, the human brain likes to conserve calories, and so when a customer realizes they have a lot in common with a brand, they fill in all the unknown nuances with trust. Essentially, the customer batches their thinking, meaning they are thinking in chunks rather than details. Commonality, whether taste in music or shared values, is a powerful marketing tool. A recent Discover Card television campaign tapped into the power of empathy by featuring people who call customer service and end up talking to an exact replica of themselves. The message? Discover Card will take care of you the same way you would take care of yourself. Demonstrate authority. Nobody likes a know-it-all, and nobody wants to be preached at. Brands that lord their expertise over the masses turn people off. For this reason, many marketing experts say we shouldn't express authority at all. That what people want is a brand that puts their arm around their customer's shoulder and walks alongside them as an equal. But this isn't completely true. Imagine walking into a nutritionist's office for the first time, determined to get into the best shape of your life. "I'd like to lose 30 pounds," you tell her. "It's been a struggle for a long time, but I'm ready." What would you do if the nutritionist looked back at you and said, "Me too"? It wouldn't take you long to realize you'd chosen the wrong nutritionist. When I talk about authority, I'm really talking about competence. When looking for a guide, a hero trusts somebody who knows what they are doing. The guide doesn't have to be perfect, but the guide needs to have serious experience helping the other heroes win the day. So how do we express our authority without bragging about ourselves so much that we step into the role of hero? As customers view our websites, commercials, or emails, they simply want to check off a box in the back of their minds that gives them confidence in our ability to help them. There are four easy ways to add just the right amount of authority to our marketing. 1. Testimonials. Let others do the talking for you. If you have satisfied customers, place a few testimonials on your website. Testimonials give potential customers the gift of going second. They know others have worked with you and attained success. Avoid stacking 10 to 20 testimonials, otherwise you run the risk of positioning yourself as the hero. 3 is a great number to start with and will serve the need most customers have to make sure you know what you're doing. Also, avoid rambling testimonials that heap endless praise on your brand. It won't take long for a customer to trust you, so keep a testimonial brief. 2. Statistics. How many satisfied customers have you helped? How much money have you helped them save? By what percentage have their businesses grown since they started working with you? A simple statement like the email marketing platform Infusionsoft's 125,000 users trust our award-winning automation software is all your potential customer needs. Moreover, this scratches the itch of the left-brain consumer who loves numbers, statistics, and facts. 3, awards. If you've won a few awards for your work, feel free to include small logos or indications of those awards at the bottom of your page. Again, there's no need to make a big deal about it, but awards go a long way in earning your customers' trust, even if they've never heard of the award. 4, logos. If you provide a business-to-business product or service, place logos of known businesses you've worked with in your marketing collateral. Customers want to know you've helped other businesses overcome their same challenges. When they recognize another business you've worked with, it provides social proof you have the ability to help them win the day. Take a minute to scan your marketing material and ask yourself whether you've demonstrated competency. Remember, you don't have to brag about yourself. Testimonials, logos, awards, and statistics will allow customers to check the trust box in the back of their minds. The question they are asking themselves are, does this brand know what they are doing? Is investing my time and money going to be worth it? And can they really help me solve my problem? How to make a great first impression. When people meet your brand, it's as though they are meeting a person. They are wondering if the two of you will get along, whether you can help them live a better life, whether they want to associate their identity with your brand, and ultimately, whether they can trust you. Harvard business professor Amy Cuddy has spent more than 15 years studying how business leaders can make a positive first impression. Cuddy distilled her research into two questions people subconsciously ask when meeting someone new. Can I trust this person? And can I respect this person?